We've been following the story of contaminated drinking water in Flint, Michigan, where thousands of children may have been poisoned by lead since the city switched its water supply in 2014. But the problem of lead contamination in this country goes far beyond Flint, and it goes far beyond our water supply. Millions of Americans live in homes that still use lead pipes and still have lead paint on the walls. But how did that lead get there? Gerald Markowitz is co-author of the book Lead Wars, The Politics of Science and the Fate of America's Children. Gerald, thanks for being here.
Thank you. It's nice to be able to talk to you about this important issue.
Well, we're glad to have you. And I want to start with Chemistry 101. Lead, if you look at the periodic table, it's known as Pb. It's a heavy metal. It's also soft. But what else can you tell us about what lead actually is?
Well, lead is a naturally occurring element in the Earth's crust. We get at it by mining and have been especially mining it over the course from the end of the 19th century into the 20th century as its use in industrial products has vastly increased. It is called one of the heavy metals, and if you pick up a can of lead paint, for example, or lead pigment, as I did, I almost threw out my back because it's a lot heavier than a regular can of paint.
Hmm. What's it look like when it comes out of the ground?
Well, it's in an ore. It's only the ore is only about 10% lead. It is kind of like a silvery color. Naturally. But it gets tarnished very easily by exposure to air, so it wouldn't necessarily always look silvery.
So lead becomes in vogue in the United States and around the world in the 19th century. In the early 20th century, we start to see problems in the United States because it's commonly used in paint, it's in gasoline, and as we well know, it's in pipes and in plumbing. What is it about lead that makes it so effective with these products?
Well, one of the good things about lead is that it's easy to get at it. It's you know, easily mined. It's not necessarily very deep. But also lead is very malleable. That is, you can work with lead very easily. And it's one of the reasons that it's used so much in plumbing because lead pipe is a lot easier for someone to work with than a copper pipe, for example. It you know, is a very stable element, which is one of the things that makes it attractive. It doesn't break down. So, I mean, all of those things make it very useful in a wide variety of products.
And what about paint? Does it make paint stronger? Does it make the colors more vibrant?
I'm not sure it really makes the colors more vibrant, but it certainly lasts a very long time. The advertisers of lead pigments claimed that it was economical because you didn't have to repaint as often. And there were always alternatives to lead. In the late 19th, early 20th century, there were zinc pigments. In the early 20th century, mid-20th century, there was titanium. Mm. And now, of course, we have a wide variety of latex paints.
Well, it's so interesting because European countries got smart to the dangers of lead very early. They started banning lead paint in the early 1900s, but it wasn't until 1978 that the United States Congress got around to banning it. Why were we so far behind?
Well, you had much greater willingness for government to regulate the economy and to regulate business in Europe than you did in the United States.
As it is today.
As it is today. And so I think that that is probably the major reason that it occurred. And then you had major corporations like General Motors and DuPont and Standard Oil that were pushing high compression engines, and they found that the use of lead in gasoline, you know, were able to go faster in cars, have what was called less knock, less banging of the engine when you added lead to gasoline.
And I understand that lead is still in use today. It's not quite as banned as we might think. We could see it in airplane fuel. We could see it in some traffic paint that's on the road. Where else do we find it today?
Well, and you're absolutely right. Lead in airplanes is still a major use of lead in gasoline. Lead in highway markings is a major use of lead in paint. Also, lead is used on bridges. But probably the most important use of lead today is in car batteries. Mm. And also in a variety of electronic devices that we carry around with us every day.
If I think about the lead that's on the bridge that you mentioned, or the lead that's in some airplane fuels, are we exposed to it when emissions fall from the airplane? Or if we rumble over the bridge, does the dust come up and get into our car?
Well, it isn't so much that when we go over a bridge, the dust rumbles up, but the bridges are constantly being refurbished, and the old paint is taken off, and they are repainted. And when you take off the lead paint, you create a massive amount of dust, and in urban areas especially, it creates a real hazard for people who live around and near those bridges.
Or do the work on the bridges.
And especially the people who do the work on the bridges. But frequently today, those people are protected, whereas lead that gets on the ground and is picked up by people's shoes and brought into their homes, and then children crawl around on the floors of those homes, they are not protected.
Because it's still in the dust, in the soil that we walk around on every day outdoors. What would it take for us to lead-proof the United States, and why can't we get rid of this problem?
Well, it's a failure of will. I mean, the cost of removing lead is quite large. But when we think about the cost of removing lead, we don't think about the cost to damaged lives of children, of their inability to work in school, and their suffering neurological damage. So, the opponents of remediating this problem and eventually eliminating this problem always talk about the cost. So it really, in some ways, is a false issue. We don't have to take off the lead paint in every home in the United States. But if you started with the places where children are at risk right now, the cost would be substantially less. And then you could progressively prioritize which areas needed to be dealt with subsequent to that.
And then, of course, you have the other issue, which is the lead pipes that are in so many homes across the country. Gerald Markowitz, public health historian at the John Jay College of Criminal Justice. He's the co-author of the book Lead Wars. Professor, thank you.
Thank you very much.